This is Scott Richmond
and Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie Sherman, good Sunday morning.
I was thinking in preparation for today's show about what a really amazing community that we live in, Missoula, Montana. I mean, it's a small town by any standard, yet we have world-class things here. We have world-class
services,
management of our city. We have more not-for-profits than almost any per capita than almost any place in the world. And we have a public library that just opened, a brand new one that was built in 2021, replaced the one that was built in, I think, 1974. And it's been getting all these accolades, including the best new public library in the world, up against cities like Barcelona's library, a little old Missoula, Montana, that, you know, when you talk to somebody from another country and you say, I'm from Missoula, they look at you like, you know, obviously they have never heard of it.
Right.
That's like saying I'm from Gwendenflaschenflossen in Finland.
Never heard of Montana.
Never even heard of Montana. You have to tell them it's somewhere near Canada and Vancouver for them to even understand it. So today on the show, we're going to have Carl Olson, who is a, you know, sort of the shepherd of the public library on the Library Foundation and, you know, its leader, to talk about how did we create this entity here? How do we create this space? How do we create a facility that is recognized now for in 2022? And now, just this past October, just a month or so ago, it was voted the Green Library of the Year for 2024, again, in the whole world, not just in, you know, the Midwest or the West or, you know, the United States or North America, in the whole world. I find that to be fascinating. And I wanted to get Carl in here to talk about, you know, why it's so and what's so special about this library. And did they plan this in some way? I mean, did they decide at the very beginning, we're going to make this the best library in the world? Or did they say, we have $38 million and we're going to build the best thing we can build for $38 million?
Carl Olson will let us know, and we'll get a little history on the new library.
And his leadership. I don't know much about Carl, so I'd like to know, to find out a lot more about him.
Me too. I think it's great. When we come back, our guest will be Carl Olson with the Missoula Public Library and the Foundation. Back after these words. All right, Arnie, we are back with our guest, Carl Olson, the Executive Director of the Missoula Public Library Foundation.
Carl, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
We want to talk a lot about our award-winning library here, but before we do, I'd like our listeners to find out a little bit about you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background?
I am born and raised in the Inland Northwest and have lived in Montana for almost 25 years and have worked for Missoula Public Library for almost 20 years. The executive director of the Library Foundation currently, and helped lead the team that raised the private funds for the new library.
So the new library was a $38 million project?
It was.
And $30 million of it was a public bond?
Right. Passed by the voters in 2016 by a landslide vote.
That's good. We like landslide votes. And then the rest had to be raised privately.
That's correct.
And was it all raised?
It was all raised.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. So you've been doing this for 20 years. As the head of the Library Foundation, are you a city employee? Is that a private operation? How does that fit with and dovetail with the library itself?
The Library Foundation is a separate nonprofit.
Okay.
That was established solely to support the library. So we bring in the advocates, we bring in the philanthropists, folks who can support the library on the private side or corporate side to give our library that extra edge.
That's good. And is this a full-time job for you?
It is a full-time job.
And before,
and then some.
Well, good. And then some is the important part. Before that, what was your career focused on? Or is there a before that?
I worked in the circulation department at the library.
So you've been a library guy your whole life.
Well, for the last almost 20 years.
That's a long time. Yeah.
Did you go to college?
I did. I went to the university here, got a degree in eco-literature, and minored in climate change studies. I think the University of Montana is the second university in the country to have a climate change studies program after Yale. There are several now, but we were kind of ahead of the game there.
I have many questions for you about libraries in general, but I'm going to save those for a minute because I think more importantly, I want to talk about this particular library. So the predecessor library to this was built in 1974.
Correct.
And then in 2021, the new one opened.
Right.
And in 2022, the library basically was awarded by the International Federation of Library Associations, not just the Inland Northwest Library Association, right? The International Federation as the public library of the year in the whole world, right? I mean, this is a big deal for Missoula. Up against Barcelona maybe and other places like that.
In 2022, I don't remember all the different countries and libraries we were up against, but it was pretty stiff competition, yeah.
And what distinguished this library from the other competition to win?
There's so much. I think people around the world are attracted, among other things, to how our library reflects our local landscape and fits in with our community here. But another thing that is really appealing to folks is the fact that we have we went to Sweden, studied the Culture House model of libraries, which has a library, public library at the core, and then other services and resources kind of radiating from that. Each community is different. One might have a film studies program with theirs. One might have a teen parenting program. The library is always at the core. We studied those culture houses, and then we brought that culture house concept back to Missoula. We're the first intentionally designed culture house library in the U.S. And so I think that's one of the things that a lot of folks around the world really look at. So what that means is we have a library that has a science museum in it with the Spectrum Discovery Center. Uh-huh. We have a family development, really robust family development program.
Families First Learning.
With Families First.
Yeah. Great program.
In the building. And then we have anyone coming in the library can use media production facilities and learn media production skills and use the equipment with our relationship with MCAT, who's also under our roof.
We know Joel.
We call it all under one roof. And so those are just some examples of the things that we brought to our library core. And that decision was made very early. One of the very first aspects of the vision for a new library, I sat down with the library director at the time and I said, you know, it looks like you're going to have to build new. It was becoming apparent, and we did a study of the old site, and it could not be expanded on.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the whole point, was to expand.
What year is this, Carl?
Level.
When this
was about around 2010.
Got it.
And I said, you know, it might be worth looking at, are there other organizations who share the library's mission who could share the footprint? It was just as simple as that.
Well,
we literally walked down the street to what was then the Children's Museum.
Sure.
You know, and then we talked to Joel at MCAT, you know, and these other organizations, and they came on board.
You know, it makes sense because with the explosion of, you know, at home, on your own media access to things, you know, Google it instead of going to a library. Libraries needed to have more purpose because why go there to do research when you can, for a lot of people, they could do it from their home, even though it's not exactly the same. So the library has to take on a different role. Back in the early 2000s, when I ran the World Trade Center, I went to our sister city, Palmerston North. And one of the things I visited there was their library.
I've heard amazing things about it.
And that, you know, even 20 years ago, that library was a multicultural.
What city is that in?
It's in Palmerston North.
Right. New Zealand. Right.
Looks very much like Missoula. You come flying in, you're flying in over the mountains, you come in, it's a very interesting, it's on a river, you know, that kind of thing. But one of the things I found so interesting, because I hadn't been in a library since I was in, you know, New York Public Library. You walked in there, they had in there and sleeping places for people that were coming through town who needed a, you know, a short rest. They were concerned about unhoused people and were providing services for that. Mm-hmm. They had a coffee house and a little bit of a restaurant. They had all sorts of other things that I didn't normally see, you know, 20, 25 years ago in a library. I came back very energized that this is probably the future of, you know, of libraries if they're going to continue to exist. And we've really, you know,
amped
put that
up.
Concept on steroids, right, here?
Yeah. It's important to remember, too, though, that the original purpose of a library hasn't gone away. And people can sit at home and Google information, but I still recommend that if they really want the best information, if they want quality information, they should have a librarian help them if they're doing research.
Yes.
And so we still do that.
Well, they forget that part, that the librarians are trained to help you do research.
That's right. They'll cut through the noise, help you cut through the noise. The traditional purpose of a library is to provide content to people, give them access to content. We still do that. But with our new library, we're able to also let people be content creators. So there's a real nice symbiotic relationship there.
So you have this concept, you sell the board on it, you sell obviously the bonding authority, you know, on this and all of that. Now you got to find someone to build this vision. Was that easy to do? Is it easy to find an architectural firm or design firm that could grasp what you were trying to get done?
I mean, it was easy to put the RFP out there. That's not hard to do.
Right.
And there were great firms that applied for it. We did go with the best firm you could possibly find in the U.S. That's MSR Design, based in Minneapolis. Mm. They had the just extreme depth of experience building libraries and museums. And there's no firm in Montana that had that depth that we needed. MSR Design did work with A&E here, local firm. Uh-huh. So they worked in partnership. But MSR really brought, you know, that depth of experience with libraries specifically to the table. And we had to have that. Wow. Because of this vision.
Right. What,
was the city and the county very supportive and involved?
Yeah.
And the state?
Totally supportive. The state, I don't know that the state has so much of a role.
Right. But the city sure does.
Yeah.
And John at Mayor Angan.
And the county, certainly.
Sure. Rest in peace. The Mayor Angan was one of his crown jewels. He talked a lot about this.
He was a big advocate for the library.
Now,
sure was.
Did this also, there are branch libraries to the main library.
We do.
Were there enhancements to those as well when this building, you know, was
that was
committed?
Not a part of the campaign.
Right.
And it wasn't a part of the building project.
Okay.
We have done some enhancements in some of our branches and continue to look at that as they're needed.
So you're open for 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
What have you learned that you didn't realize when you first opened? What has emerged out of thin air that you didn't expect?
Wow, that's hard to say. There are some really minor ways that, and you would find this opening any public building, new house, whatever you have, and you find on paper, that looked great, but this really needs to move somewhere else.
Sure.
This isn't really working. But, you know, the number of items like that and the level of that kind of change is just really, really minor. What is more fascinating to me is how much the vision held together.
Right.
From,
well, because a vision is just a vision, right?
And right. People just brainstorming, from the community giving public input, all of that getting synthesized by the architects and the library leadership. and then putting it on paper and doing the renderings. And, you know, the library is 95% what they said it would be. And it functions the way that the architects said it would function.
That's really amazing. And it's big because it's 100,000 square feet, right, roughly?
Yeah, it's a little bit more than that. It's about 112,000 square feet. Yeah.
Wow, that's a big facility.
Yeah.
So the Missoula Public Library wins in 2022 the International Federation of Library Associations Library of the Year. But that's not enough. So in October of 2024, again, this wonderful International Federation of Library Associations awarded Missoula Public Library the Green Library Grand Scale Award.
Correct.
Again, number one, right? Number one in the world.
Number one in the world. Yeah.
That's
amazing.
Like twice.
Yeah. And that marries your studies with, right, at the university.
Well, sure. I mean, yeah.
And that we've got it partially, I think, as I remember reading about it, was the innovative approach, which we've already talked about, to housing third-party organizations and, you know, expanding the footprint and the vision and all of that, but also for its energy-efficient design.
Correct.
And what's special about the design that caused this organization to, to pay attention to it?
Well, the first thing I'll say, it's not any one thing.
Right.
So it's a big combination of many things. And that they looked at and that we presented to them. But when it comes to energy, there are several innovations and strategies that were used in the design of this building. I think it's, frankly, the best kept secret in Missoula because we don't have a bunch of signs up saying, you know, this is what's happening energy-wise in your building. But there's some really cool stuff that's happening. So first and foremost is cooling in any building, public building, is a huge consumer of energy.
Right.
And in Missoula, even though, you know, we might have long winters, those are actually getting shorter. Our summer's getting longer. The summers are getting hotter.
Right.
And so cooling is just becoming more and more of a big energy consumer. In our building, we don't use mechanical air conditioning. We pull chilled water from the aquifer, and then we use that water to cool air that is then circulated through the building. The water, as the water warms, it's recycled back into the aquifer.
Isn't that how the Batcave operates?
Is it?
Yeah, no, that sounds pretty
cool.
Are
there other buildings in Missoula that follow that same
I don't know
system?
That. I don't know.
I don't believe so.
And I can't. I've never heard of that.
And probably not at this level.
Right, sure.
Yeah. So that's number one. And that just minimizes one of the biggest energy consumption, you know, uses in a building like ours. So that's one thing. Another thing is all of the air, whether it's cooling or heating, is distributed through an underfloor system.
Mm.
And that represents about a 30% energy savings versus having air blown from high above
ductwork
down to where people need it to be comfortable. With an underfloor system, it only needs to reach 5 or 6 feet for all the humans in the building to be comfortable. And so you can see the difference there. It takes a lot less energy to push that air up to that level rather than blowing it down 2 or 3 times
more.
So there's the savings there through that underfloor system.
And there's also lots of cool automation. I mean, you have what a lot of libraries have, the outside book drop. But I like to bring my books back going inside and putting it in and watch it go on the conveyor belt and get distributed and all that kind of stuff. That whole system is relatively new.
Yeah. It is. It definitely is for Missoula.
Yeah.
Any library.
What is that? Can you describe what it is?
It's basically, it's Danish technology, and it's basically luggage handling technology that's used for books and other items in the library, and it scans everything.
Right.
Once you put it in the book drop, it's automatically scanned, and then it's sent to a cart that's destined for that area of the library where that item belongs.
Still based on the Dewey Decimal System?
Yeah, still based on the
Dewey Decimal System. I learned that growing in.
I mean, that's all converted to a digital code. And So that saves staff time in sorting the items and gives them more time to be out on the floor with people.
Let's do a quick ID, Arnie. Our guest is Carl Olson. He's the executive director of the Missoula Public Library Foundation.
So, Carl, now that we're open for 3 years, has there been an increase in usage? What's the profile now looks like for this library now?
I would say that right now we're getting back to pre-pandemic levels. So we had the really strange situation and experience of opening a brand new world-class library in the middle of a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, our opening was delayed a year because of the pandemic and its impact both on the construction process and then on, you know, the public's being able to use public spaces. So during the pandemic, there was a big dip in an obvious dip in visitorship of the library.
Right.
And then that is slowly climbing back up. And then even a dip in the amount of items that were circulated in the library. A lot of people used the library during the pandemic. You know, it was a lifesaver for a lot of people.
Sure.
To be able to continue to access materials. And as soon as we could, we provided curbside service, even when the building wasn't open, so people could pick up items, had home delivery service. So a lot of people relied on the library during that time. But it still took a hit to our circulation numbers. And so those are slowly climbing back up as well.
How many employees?
I think our system has probably 40 or 45 employees and in our library system.
We know how much the building costs, but how will you finance? What's the funding for the day-to-day operation of the library?
The funding's through mill levies that taxpayers
and it's managed by a board of trustees.
We have a library board of trustees. Yes, correct.
So
work closely with the county as well.
We built this 112,000 square foot library. What's going to happen to the old library block? Everybody wants to know. Burning question. You got a whole block there.
Well, should I just make everyone happy and say there's going to be a Trader Joe's on the ground level?
That would be nobody would complain about that except that's some local merchants.
That's fake news. As
I know.
I mean, I don't know. Actually, I don't want to trick people. But
don't trick. Don't even say that.
Yeah. People coming from the library.
People are going to be lining up outside for
that. So the developers, I believe, have been hired, and they're looking at different ways to develop that old library block. I'm assuming it'll be kind of a mixed use situation, probably some kind of retail on the ground level,
right.
Maybe some offices, some housing. I don't know.
Right.
I mean,
but
it would
be nice to have mixed use and housing, some more downtown housing.
It would.
Because that would drive Trader Joe's here.
Especially affordable.
Yeah.
And a lot of people want a Trader Joe's. So just throwing that out there, that would be great.
Well, it's funny, when you drive up to Spokane to go to the Trader Joe's, you walk in and when your cart comes up to the checkout and it's filled up to the brim, they say, "You're from Missoula, aren't you?"
They know. There's a new one in Coeur d'Alene coming online in November.
Yeah, there is. Slowly migrating this way.
Slowly.
Is there something that, you know, being in the building now 3 years, what are you hearing that there's not enough of, or something people wanted that's not there? You know, what's the feedback been? It's got to be something, Carl.
Got to be something that people are missing.
That they feel.
That they're not getting.
Well, there's a coffee
shop. Food.
Coffee shop's still open, right?
We've got a cafe there. Yeah. Clyde Coffee's at the library. Right. We did have a few months where we didn't have a coffee shop.
Right. I remember.
Right.
And people really.
Parking.
Really wanted that.
Thing.
Parking's always going to be maybe the number one complaint, if you will.
Anywhere downtown.
About the library in downtown. We'll never ever have enough parking to make.
But truthfully, you can park behind parking space by the Holiday.
You got to pay for it, though.
I mean, yeah, you got to pay, but
it's a library.
It's not a lot of. It's not like $40 like in New York City.
That's true.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, there is plenty of parking downtown for people who are willing to
pay $2, you know,
pay a little bit, or walk just a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Anything
people still find their way to the library. Right. There's higher and higher demand for digital books and electronic materials.
Sure.
That demand continues to increase. So we don't have the budget for that to meet the demand for it. And so that's always something that the library has to weigh and try and maximize as much as they can the materials that
that brings up a question. Is there a network of libraries that, like, if there's an installation, let's say, of some type of content or some thematic installation that kind of brings programming, you know, seasonal programming to different libraries, and do we partake in that, and do we have things coming up?
Libraries do access, like, exhibits and displays that travel around the country mm-hmm. and are promoted through library networks. To my knowledge, we don't have anything coming up along those lines. Mm-hmm. We do have, this is produced and developed right here in our own town, but we are installing Salish cultural interpretive materials right. in the building. The signage on every level, it's really more than a sign. I mean, it's kind of opens a window onto different aspects of Salish culture right here in our valley. Mm-hmm. So that installation will be going up this month, and we're right. really excited to unveil that.
That's cool.
That's something I think that's important to be a part of our building.
So there is another library in town at the University of Montana. Is there collaboration, cooperation? I mean, no library can do everything at all. You don't have the budget to do everything. So is there?
Sure.
What's the relationship between the two libraries?
Well, it's super friendly, but they have different, you know, little different missions, and the university library is specifically for the university community. We are for everyone, including the university community.
Right.
You know, nothing against university library, but a lot of students like coming to our library because they like being in that environment.
Like to be downtown, you go across the street, get a beer, come back.
Yeah, and study out on the terrace. And yes. And we see more student use of this new library building than we did with our old library. Our library is a part of a consortium. I'm going to say 60 libraries across the state of Montana that share materials with each other on a daily basis. There's a courier system across the state, and that helps expand access. You know, you have your home library, the shelves you can browse, but you have access to the shelves of libraries all over the state of Montana. So if you want that, you know, obscure book about the history of someone's family ranch in Miles City, you're likely to be able to find that in another library across our state.
Right.
Put it on hold, have it sent to our library. Hopefully within days, it's on our shelf for the library user to pick up. So we have that system. Our library's been at the forefront of improving that kind of access for people across the state of Montana.
So let me remind our listeners, how much does it cost to be a member of the Missoula Public Library?
It's a whole lot of zeros. Yeah.
And how long can that possibly last? Everybody charges for everything. So how long can a library just be free? Free public library. It almost sounds like it's a catch, right? Come down here. This library is free. You can use all these services. You know, you can come in and spend the whole day here. How long does that last? You think forever?
Yeah. Why not? Why not forever? It's the greatest social experiment in the United States. Free public library access for everyone, regardless.
It is amazing.
It is.
Regardless of their background, their address, their education level, and their ability to pay.
Well, as a kid growing up in New York City, one of my great, you know, joys actually growing up was to go to the New York Public Library, see the two big lions on the steps, go in, look at the design, and it was like a museum. It was free.
It's iconic.
You know, it's iconic, and there's, you know, you can learn stuff. I mean, it's a library. I mean, you know, you get a card, you get books.
This is a good question. New York's public library has its own, you know, it is what it is. It's massive, but it builds on all the environment of the city and brings it to the library. Do we, as a city, Missoula. We have a great history of writers and creative writers. Do we embrace aspects of our, you know, our history and bring them through the library and give rise to that?
We do. I mean, we feature local and Montana writers in library programming throughout the year and, you know, really celebrate that. One of the most recent programs like that was for Chris Latray and celebrating his new book, Becoming Little Shell. And that was almost a standing room only program for a really important book by someone who is going to become a beloved Montana writer, if he's not already. So that's just one example. We do celebrate that. Our library, our Friends of the Library, started the annual award for Montana books and Montana writers. That's still ongoing. And in our Montana room, we have a special space called the Montana Room, which I like to encourage people to go visit. We have a special collection of those award-winning Montana writers and books.
I can't help but reminisce about the book cop from Seinfeld. If you remember, and his name was Joe Bookman, if you ever remember. And it was played by a character actor named Philip Michael Hall. And it was a
Bookman.
Joe Bookman, right. The library cop, because Jerry had books that had been checked out in 1971 and hadn't returned them. And the library, you know, as a
that
kid.
That happens.
You know, as a kid, I had fear. So you would find a book and you realize it was overdue and it could have been overdue a couple of months. You'd be like freaked out by it. It wasn't how much you were going to get charged because it was like, I don't know, when I was a kid, 2 cents a day or some ridiculous amount. But you always fear that you were breaking the law by keeping a book beyond the time you were allowed to have the book.
I've always said that there is nothing that makes an ordinary citizen feel more like a scofflaw than their overdue library items.
Right.
And for partly for that reason and for other reasons, that's why our library did away with fines.
Yeah, that's really good to know. No fines.
It really is free.
If you lose a book and never return it, you're going to be charged for that book.
Right.
But we don't charge fines. We're not about guilting people. Right. And we want to equalize things so that everyone can have
access. By the way, you brought up digital books before. How does someone check out a digital book? Is it given just is it encrypted for one use? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't use digital books myself, but you get that for a limited time.
Ah.
And you're not able to share it with others.
And if you
don't read your digital book or aren't able to renew it before its due date, it goes away. Yeah.
So the library is now...
You can't even be fined for that.
No, this is important information for
listeners.
No,
you can't be fined.
Library is still free and there's no fines.
How about audiobooks? There's no fines. Audiobooks, same thing, right?
If they're downloaded.
Downloaded or physical. Well, because I find a lot of people talk about I'm gonna read a book, but they don't read, they just listen to it.
Yeah, we don't make any distinction there.
Right. It's good. I'm good at listening.
We still have books on CD as well. Yeah.
It's cool.
You know, when we donated a transmitter and a control panel, not like this, but to the community library and helped install that. So that was the first time I worked with the library. It was in 2022.
To the community radio station?
Yeah, community radio station.
Uh-huh.
And I had to go on top of the roof to see that we had a clear shot. I probably worked with you on that or someone there.
Yeah.
A clear shot of Dean Stone Mountain so we could transmit.
Okay.
You guys have all that in saying, my engineer, when we did the installation, he goes, this is a dream. That under the floor system of panels, being able to work through that, no holes in the wall, no nothing. It was all done through that floor system.
Well, so it's not only the air distribution that's under the floor, all the electricity and technology is under the floor,
too. Well, that's one good thing about building a library in the 2020s. You have a lot different technology than 1974.
Well, also the decision was made, and this is part of the... You know, one of the things that got us the Greenest Library of the World Award, the decision was made to design a library that would have the ultimate flexibility for the future and the technology that we don't know that is coming.
Right.
So our building is very flexible and adaptable for use. It can be expanded on in the future at some future time when people need a larger library. It can be expanded on. And it's also durable. The building was designed and constructed to last 100-plus years, very much unlike our old library,
right,
which they kind of bragged about that it was going to last 35 years. So all of those things, including the location and the library board choosing to keep it in the downtown area where it has easy access to public transit and other public services and cultural activities, all of that is very kind of, you know, that's looking towards the future.
Yeah.
And helps our.
And it's hard to know because technology changes so rapidly. You have to have you have to be pretty visionary. I just put a TV monitor in a place in Summerlin, Nevada, and I didn't need to put any cable in the wall.
Nothing.
It works right off of a Wi-Fi box. Not a single wire. Nothing. Just plug it in. Everything is, and that's in 2024. Who knows what 2035 is going to bring in terms of that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it changes.
Well, that's actually an interesting point because the library for many is a point of connectivity, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To the outside world. They don't have the benefit of having private internet service or they don't want to go to a coffee shop. So
that's right.
Do you find percentage, I was going to ask you two questions. One is, of the media that you offer, how much of it is physical versus digital versus audio versus, you know, I don't know what's net, you know.
I don't have that number. Yeah.
But more and more, I would think, would be digital just because.
There's a good mix when I've looked.
Digital's increased, certainly, over time. But the physical definitely hasn't gone away.
No.
And the actual proportion, I couldn't tell you what that is right now, but over the last, 10, 20 years, libraries have seen a symbiotic relationship between the more access people have to information digitally, then the more things they find out there that they want to access physical items as well, whether it's books or movies or...
People sometimes forget there are movies.
There's everything.
Kinds of multimedia things there as well.
Well, my second question is... And you don't have to give us proper names, but I have to believe there's a cast of characters and like a group of people that you see day in and day out who make the library kind of their second home.
Our daily readers. Yeah.
What is the daily readers?
They read the newspapers, right, around the world.
Right.
But it's like a sitcom waiting to be written.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is the library because it's just a people congregate there. They bring their personalities there. That's part of the experience. Right.
They do.
Are there archetypes?
There's every archetype you could probably think of in the library.
Go sometime up and look at the magazine racks and you could see the people sitting around in the easy chairs around there. It looks like it's their home.
Right.
They just settled in. They have a big bottle of water or coffee or whatever, and they're going through Architectural Digest or the newspaper from San Francisco or whatever. It's just
I think about Starbucks, and how Starbucks is moving away from being kind of that meeting and congregation space for the community because they're catering to drive-through.
Right.
Right? That's a better use of their footprint. So it puts more emphasis on the library or coffee shops like the Break Espresso.
Right.
Right? So
Break Espresso doesn't even have Wi-Fi, do they?
They do.
Do they? Okay.
Yeah. I have meetings there.
Well, and Starbucks at the library is now putting in EV charging stations. So that's the other thing they're using their footprint for.
Are they?
A number of places, yeah. High-speed EV charging.
Question for you.
So people will go in and spend more money when you go in and sitting down. You probably get a sandwich.
Which makes sense.
Biscuit or whatever.
So what's next for the library? What's next for you? Because, this is a major undertaking and a major project. Mm-hmm. And these accolades and awards are a big deal. But I don't believe you're satisfied, although you don't look restless. I believe that what's next? What's next in your vision?
Well, we do have to talk about climate.
Talk about that.
And, I don't want to wrap this up without mentioning that the Missoula Public Library is the only certified and freely accessible clean air space in Missoula. So as, you know, as our summers get hotter and as we are at more risk for forest fires in our region, our wide region, it's where people can go to get some clean air if they don't have the ability to have clean air.
Particularly elder people.
Elderly people or people who have, you know,
respiratory problems.
So, or just people who want to get out of the apocalyptic atmosphere.
Yeah.
So that was another key thing. And, you know, at the time, like 38 million may not seem as much now, but at the time it seemed like a steep price tag, but that was something that was considered really, really important to make sure that Missoula doesn't have a lot of inventory of clean air space. So the library was going to be it. And so we're really proud of that fact. And that also contributes to us, you know, being a globally recognized green library.
That's pretty cool.
I can see as, and it looks like, you know, we're on a trajectory to see more climate disruptions and impacts from climate over time.
Right.
And I can see the library being really nimble to accommodate that. So here's an example. Let's say we have an extreme heat wave and extended extreme heat wave. The library could decide to change its public hours and have more expansive hours so that people can use it maybe longer into the night and get respite from the heat in their homes. So that's an example of what we could be seeing down the pipeline. The library is poised to be able to help our community for those kinds of things. We saw it with this last, what was it? The great windstorm.
August
2024 in August, when all of a sudden we estimate we probably had a 50% increase in attendance during those 4 or 5 days. My electricity was out for 4 days and I live close to downtown. But during that time, people were coming in to charge their devices. They were coming in to do their remote work. They were coming in just to be in a cool environment. So, you know, the library is designed to be able to accommodate that and adapt to what could be coming down the pike.
That's much more useful and utilitarian than when I was a kid in the library. Backup plan was to be a fallout shelter, a bomb shelter. So
yeah.
You could go to if you were going to be attacked.
You're betraying your age there.
No, I'm happy about my age. Nothing I can do about it anyway. Two quick, bigger questions I want to ask you.
Yeah.
Libraries all over and other public spaces are facing the issue of the unhoused. What is the library's policy towards, you know, unhoused people and they're coming and using the library facility or overusing or extending their welcome? Or is there a policy set up for that issue?
Our policy for the unhoused population in Missoula is the same policy we have for anyone in Missoula, regardless of their address.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no limit to how much you can use the library during the public hours. Anyone can use it for any amount of time.
Right.
We don't even have a limit to the number of items a person checks out.
Right.
I mean, we don't treat them any differently than we would treat any. We have policies in place for people who disrupt operations of the library or disrupt other people's ability to enjoy the library services. And so an unhoused person, if they're disruptive, the same policy that's going to apply is going to apply to them. That would apply to someone who may have a home, but they're also, you know, being disruptive. In our old library, the most extreme incident we ever had was a guy who ran into the library and barricaded himself in the bathroom, and he had a gun, and we had to evacuate that building. And he was, I don't remember what the issue was, but he wasn't unhoused.
Right. He just,
He had a home, and I think he had issues in his home.
Right.
and his home life, and he was going off the rails, and he just was being chased.
So that was
and his- decided, you know, he was being chased right. in a vehicle and decided to use the library.
But if someone needs a respite or they're un, you know, they're unhoused or they just need a respite, they can come and just sit and relax at the library without taking books or anything like that and just hang out.
Of course. Yeah. And people who have houses also
right.
use the library for respite.
Right. Another big question. There are movements in the United States these days to ban books, you know, to take books off the shelves. Some of them, you know, that have been on shelves of libraries for hundreds or so years.
Yeah.
Do we have a code or related to our library collection, or how are things picked or not picked or added or removed? How does that work?
I mean, the library has a professional system for populating our collection
right.
with materials that's kind of served the library well for many, many decades. And mm-hmm. the community has input in that. If you want to see something in our shelves and want to be able to access, you can ask for the library to acquire it and purchase it. And so the community is involved in that as well.
Any books ever been removed by somebody saying, I find that book offensive?
Not in the time that I've been here.
And that's been a long time.
Thank God.
I mean, our policies don't really allow people to choose for other people what they can access.
Let's do a quick break. Our guest is Carl Olson. He is the executive director of the Missoula Public Library Foundation. Back after this. All right, Arnie, we are back with Carl Olson.
Carl, how do people avail themselves to the library? The hours to go online and look at what's available, and you know what's the general pitch for the Missoula Public Library in 2024?
Just go to MissoulaPublicLibrary.org. You'll get all the hours there, our catalogs there, our program calendars there, lots and lots of information.
And even about the other organizations that are there as well.
The other organizations are listed there as well, our branches. And we even have a page there for our brand new bookmobile, which people might want to be aware of.
That's cool.
We've been without a bookmobile for many years in Missoula. We needed one for the rural areas and underserved communities. So,
what about if somebody wants to get a tour or learn more about the facility itself and a little intimidated by it?
They should drop in and ask a staff person to show them around. We'll make sure that someone can take them through and give them a little highlights tour of
sure.
the building.
And do people, last question, when people come in, we have a lot of visitors here. Tourism is one of our biggest industries.
They love the library.
I was going to say, the library is definitely part of that pitch of come to Missoula.
Yeah. Yeah.
Has to be.
People from all over the world, come through there. And I get emails from people in other countries saying, you know, I was there, I visited, I saw this, I saw that. Tell me more about it because we want to do this. I mean, we really are a global role model.
Yeah.
That's
global
a great
award winning here in Missoula, Montana.
That's a great place to leave it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Carl, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Carl, it was a pleasure having you.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
Arnie, I'll see you next Sunday.
Next Sunday, Scott.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Calling all motivated leaders in the 406. Make an impact and become a positive role model to Montana youth. Join the team at Montana Youth Challenge Academy. Share in our mission of providing academic, professional, and life coping skills that students need for success. Full or part-time positions available. Enjoy competitive compensation and benefits. The day-to-day asks a lot, but it also has a lot to give. Apply online at statecareers.mt.gov.
Brought to you by Montana Youth Challenge Academy and this station.